Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. A story I wanted to just bring up because we're coming up on flu season, and we talked about it last flu season, but I think one of our guests said, like, flu shots are a myth.
I said I don't get them.
Yeah.
Well, maybe someone may have said that, but I said,
yeah, one of our
I never got the flu, so why didn't you get the flu shot? And then I was shamed, and I got the flu shot because they're like, hey, you fucking idiot. Have you heard of herd immunity?
Yeah.
And I had to be sort of in touch with my own privilege of my own health.
Yeah.
Because I think just because I don't have it doesn't mean I can't carry it and infect.
Right. So we and a lot of our listeners are young people in the prime of our health. And so we, you know,
keep telling yourself that
we might get the flu, but it'll just like knock us down for a couple days or whatever. Young people and the elderly, though, will.
Younglings.
Like very young children and
olds.
The olds. Can die from the flu.
Right.
It's one of the biggest killers of people in that demographic. And also, you can be a carrier of the flu virus without showing any symptoms. And so you might be, if you don't get your flu shots, you will be more likely to be carrying that disease and passing it around. And yeah, you can be killing people and never realize you're doing it because you didn't get the flu shot.
You could be killing people.
Seriously, though,
yeah,
man.
No, it's true. I'm telling you, I have to, it's a tough thing to like let go of like your own ego, because I had a health ego, right?
Right.
Where I'm like, that shit is for weak ass motherfuckers who get the flu. I ain't never got the fucking
right.
flu, so I don't need that shit. And I was thoroughly dragged.
Yes.
Deservedly by the Zeit Gang and my health care professional friends of mine who I said that shit to. And I realized too, I am, like I say again, scientifically illiterate. And if you are not a fucking expert on any of this shit, you shouldn't have hot takes on shit like this. Because you don't know what the fuck is going on. But yes, please do care about other people.
Well, I will say that this year was a record cold and flu season.
Yeah.
It was really, really, really rough. We had several deaths, and
right.
it got real gnarly.
Yeah.
I'm a huge hand washer.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And
I noticed that.
I've been washing. You have a wash basin next to you. I bring a sink with me. I recommend everyone out there to Google how to wash your hands,
right.
because most of us aren't doing it correctly. You're supposed to wash for a good amount of time. Don't forget your thumbs. Don't forget under your rings.
And your fingertips, too.
Fingertips in between your fingers. Take a moment and really wash.
Clean them shits. Yeah.
Clean them, because that's a lot of the way it's transferred. Also, train yourself to not touch your face.
Yes.
Mm. I didn't get sick this cold and flu. I haven't been sick once this whole year.
Right.
Not to brag.
Yeah. And you haven't touched your face all year.
Touched my face once.
You put gloves on at night.
I do. I do a full hazmat suit when I do my eye cream at night.
Right. Or
but,
like what they put babies, you know, when you put the little mittens on babies. Yeah.
I swaddle.
You know what's funny?
I swaddle myself.
About the hand washing thing, I remember when I was a kid, my orthodontist, when he would wash his hands before like an exam, I was like, look at this fucking fool, all crazy hand washing style. Because he was like doing the finger thing where I thought he was doing like, hey, give me some money, you know, rubbing your fingertips
pay
together.
Up, pay
hey,
up for these
I'm
braces.
Walking here, that kind of thing. And then I was like, is that the way you're supposed to wash your hands? He's like, well, I'm putting my hands in your mouth. So I'd imagine my fingertips, he like was very patronizing, but I was like, that's true. Thank you for that. And then I always like, kind of do this thing now and really get in my.
Did he keep the hands up when it came
no,
over
he
to
wasn't,
you?
He wasn't scrubbing into
Wait,
the OR.
He went well, raw dog or he didn't put gloves on?
You were supposed to wear gloves?
Yes. Miles.
I would imagine.
Oh, shit.
Was he like your neighborhood?
I don't know. No, it was like out behind the Target.
Oh,
my mom's house. Whatever, the braces worked.
Yeah.
I think that flu shots are one of those things. I think there's some anti-vaxxers who will tell you that flu shots like create super flus and shit like that. And so the way that that actually works is there are like we do take too many antibiotics and bacterial infections do create like super bugs. So you shouldn't be taking antibiotics unless your doctor actually prescribes them to you. That is like something that they're working on to, because there is an arms race between antibiotics and, you know, germs basically. But flu is the flu is a virus, and that is, it's not one of those things where by getting a flu shot, you are hurting the, or you're creating some super flu, which is another common misconception.
And look, unless you're a motherfucking scientist doing this research, who are you to then argue with the people that have been doing it?
Right. How is the booze industry dealing
the
with
the booze industry?
Legal marijuana.
I mean, look, they know what the fuck they're doing. You know what I mean?
Everybody's
they
trying see to get the a writing, piece of the pie.
They see the writing on the wall. Beer sales have been in a steady decline for the most part. There was a, I think in 2015, there was a consulting report that was basically saying, it was titled, "A Perfect Storm Brewing in the Global Beer Business."
Brewing.
And, cute.
You know, you headline writers, you.
Yep, yep. So weed is definitely on the in the ascendancy. Beer consumption is slightly just, you know, going down bit by bit. So that's got people looking around and seeing what's going on. So Adolphus Busch the Fifth, okay.
Oh, God.
The great, great grandson of Anheuser-Busch.
I bet he's a super
or founder
chill
of Anheuser-Busch,
dude
yeah.
to hang out with. Oh, and
oh man.
Very normal.
Can you imagine?
I got such a visual instantly.
Going to college with that dude?
The collar is popped.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
It was surgically put onto
yes.
his skin, a popped collar.
Like a vampire, like high.
I'm sure he's a nice guy. And if you know Adolphus Busch V, the Fifth,
right.
hit us up and let me know if he's a good guy. Anyway, so they've been began putting their money behind legal weed, like a new vape company, like a vape pen type thing. The heir to the Jim Beam fortune, I think he made his company public in Canada. And a lot of people are just starting to look, you know, sort of north to the north since weed has been legalized in Canada. So like Molson Coors, they also said they're like forming a partnership with a weed company to make like sort of non-alco weed drinks for Canadians. So it looks like, you know, they kind of see, you know, this is the wave that where it's all going. And so they're going to be investing in it more and more, which makes sense because I think they found that even in Oregon, when recreational weed was legalized, like a lot of their craft beer sales went down. Now, it's not that it was necessarily that was the cause of that, but that was just something they noticed sort of happening at the same time. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But it's kind of funny because the U.S. Border Patrol also, or the CBP, just made this weird announcement in Politico where how they're going to hassle Canadians who smoke weed trying to cross the border because it's illegal here.
The U.S. Border Patrol?
Yeah. It's such a stupid fucking law where it's like, hey, have you smoked weed ever? And if you have, you have to tell us, because if you lie, that's fraud, and then you can be barred from entering the U.S. for life. And it puts people in a very weird position. In Politico, they're saying, this is a statement from someone from CBP. They're like, oh, our officers are not going to be asking everyone whether they have used marijuana, but if other questions lead there, or if there's a smell coming from the car, they might ask. Because they're saying, like, marijuana wet residue can linger. They said, if asked about past drug use, travelers should not lie, he said. If you lie about it, that's fraud and misrepresentation, which carries a lifetime ban. Which is odd because there are a lot of people, too, like they're saying if you are even in the legal weed business in Canada and they're like, oh, what do you do for work? And you're like, oh, I work in like the legal weed business. They're like, oh, we don't want people who are like, you know, profiting off the proliferation of drugs and like smuggling narcotics or whatever the fuck. It's a fucking weird.
Well, because it's a federal institution.
Yeah,
right?
But it's just such an odd thing to be like taking this stance and like letting people know. It's like, but half the fucking borders, so many border states with Canada have legalized recreational weed, even though it's a state thing, but it's still just this like really dumb butting up of federal and state law and just, yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because it's funny that you also have these American companies who are like looking to Canada, invest in that business, but then Canadians who are trying to enter this way, they're going to hassle them for, it's just.
I just don't understand why people would want to stop drinking a drug that gets you no more fucked up than weed and that kills you. Like, why?
Right.
What's their problem?
Yeah, you tell me how many violent crimes are committed on weed.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I think
crunch those numbers.
These feds need to sit back and smoke a fatty and chill out.
There you
hey,
go.
Am
That's
I right,
what
sister?
I think.
Hell yeah. Willie Nelson.
Have y'all ever been to Portland or Oregon? I mean, I had a can of booch, cannabis kombucha there that was very strong.
Yes.
And you were kind of fucked up.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
What was the canned beverage that we?
Oh, Sprig soda.
Sprig soda.
Yo, holler back. I drank all that Sprig, man, and I'm trying to get right this.
We're out
this week. Yeah, but it's Sprig will get you. Have you had a Sprig soda?
No. Woo! Is that a cannabis infused?
Yeah, it's a soda.
And they gave us a case, right?
No HFC, hey, no high fructose corn syrup and that shit. You know what I mean? They have a low-cal version if you want the sugar-free
version.
But
a lot of THC.
Yo, a lot of THC, 45 mils.
You got to be careful. I overdosed on Can of Quench once at Disneyland.
Can of Quench?
Can of Quench.
What is that, like a
it
Gatorade?
It was like a lemonade.
Wow.
And it was a crazy experience.
You were in the wheelchair?
I had to be wheeled out of Tortilla Joe's in downtown Disney. I'm not lying. Be
Did
careful.
You think you were dying?
It was really, really bad.
Yeah.
It, you know, be careful with your dosage.
Yeah. Well, edibles,
be careful
they
with
can hit you,
your dosage,
and you
will
be lights out. Gorilla Radio.
The Brett Kavanaugh vote confirmation got a little more interesting.
It was smooth sailing just a few days ago.
Somehow. Yeah.
So... Over the weekend, well, I guess multiple weeks ago, I guess it was back in July, Senator Feinstein got an anonymous letter from somebody who recounted being sexually assaulted by Brett Kavanaugh in high school, and then that person finally came forward and said who she was.
Oh, we're going to see this. She's going to testify.
Yeah, she's going to. So her name is Christine Blasey Ford.
Yeah.
Is that Blasey?
Yeah. I think, forgive us if we
Blasey is
it.
A dope name.
This is going
name.
To be high political drama.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Right? I mean, literally, this nominee is in the balance.
It is now
because... This is the only disqualifier could be if she seems credible enough.
Right, and she took an FBI, a lie detector test, which we know lie detector tests can be a little bit iffy
scientifically. When you say we, what do you mean by that?
Huh?
When you said we know.
Just in general, that the idea of
You're
polygraph
saying I know
tests.
That?
I think some people do.
All right. You said wait.
Okay. Do you feel that polygraph tests are 100%?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't like being spoken for.
Yeah. No, you're not. I'm not speaking for you. But I think people have publicly disputed lie detector tests.
They
not
have.
To say that it's that means that she's lying.
Right.
But she's clearly here to show that she's being as honest as possible. She has nothing to gain from this. She's clearly, this is only going to be something that is going to be traumatic for her because, as you've seen, like people are already doxing her. And trying to tear her down. I think there's been some senators who have said, well, why did it take so long?
Right.
Which is the dumbest fucking way to question somebody who's coming out with this kind of thing. But now it's gotten to the point where people like Lindsey Graham or Jeff Flake, they're starting to be like, well, we should probably hear from this person at this point.
How do you not want to hear from this
person? I mean, up until this point, I thought they were going to
bury it.
Yeah, because Chuck Grassley seemed in no way interested. There was that weird letter that came out from 65 women that had gone to high school with, but when they dug deeper, they weren't all from the same high school.
Right.
So it was just like
this. Well, he went to an all-boys high school, correct?
Right.
Yeah, right. So just people.
So a lot of guys have transitioned since then.
That or, or these were people they paid.
Good for them. Very progressive.
Very good. I'm endorsing that.
Yeah. And now it's to the point where, there are many calls from, just a couple GOP senators, but most of the
Dems.
Somebody
has to know. I mean, I'm not talking about senators, but there's got to be some kid who remembers that party or.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not
of
that
course.
Long ago.
No.
Right.
I mean it was 36 years ago.
It was. Right, 36 years ago, but I mean, it is clearly a traumatic event in her past that she has, that her life has had to be oriented around.
Right.
It's like in the way that all traumas sort of change how we live our lives. And like, that's the question I have is she goes up, she says, this is something that happened to me. I've been dealing with it for decades. I was in therapy when I first talked about it. Like to my husband 6 years ago and specifically called him out. And then he's going to come out and say, no, that didn't happen. But like my drunken recollection of it is better than her like actual recollection of it. And
well, at first he said this absolutely false. And then he's like, but then the person came forward, which seems to me that he does remember this person in some manner.
Oh, okay.
He said, so his latest quote, though, is, I'm willing to talk to the Senate Judiciary Committee in any way the committee deems appropriate to refute this false allegation from 36 years ago and defend my integrity, which I think it's interesting that he chose to throw in the from 36 years ago, just because it seems like that is going to be one of the tacks they take is to say, well, why now?
Right.
Why are you doing this now?
Well, I know. Yeah, I think a lot of people, at least from the White House, would rather not have her testify in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee because they're optically, people are going to be sympathetic. Yeah, no shit.
Yes.
But like, don't this person, and Kellyanne Conway surprisingly was like, I think the woman should be heard.
Right.
Which
I don't, can't imagine any other avenue.
Yeah, but I've seen, the Republicans have been so brazen through this process throughout the time that I wouldn't have been surprised if Chuck Grassley, considering that there were so many documents that they chose to suppress, be like, no, it's been too late. They should have brought it up sooner. It doesn't matter what this person went through. And this, even though this is a lifetime appointment for someone who's trying to, who could possibly shift the legal landscape of this country, well, let's just get it done.
Yeah. They're being quiet now because they're waiting to see if they can get away with just pushing it through. And it
they could. No one could outright right now just say no to. I mean, Chuck Grassley kind of did say, well, this is really late in the game. But, well, you know, I think it's something that definitely has to be heard. And it's, you know, people were showing like just sort of when you look at what the majority looks like for the Senate Judiciary Committee, it's all men. There's not even a woman on there.
What?
And, of course, their sentiments are going to like they're
Kamala
focused on getting this. For the majority on the Republicans.
Oh, for the Republicans. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So he was meeting at the White House earlier today. We're recording this on Monday, but
he was meeting. He was sweating.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's no good version of
this. It
has
nothing to do with what he's going to deny it.
Right.
It's all about there's a third thing.
Yeah.
That's why it sucks so hard for her. This is like, I mean, to have to relive your trauma on the most national stage. Like
100%,
Anita Hill was like turned into like a punchline slash, you know, she's like a household name because she had a similar situation. And this is like a private trauma that this person has chosen to, you know, come forward with and not really even chosen because she wanted to remain anonymous, but then she started, like, as she was leaving class, a BuzzFeed reporter approached her, and, you know, it seemed like only a matter of time before her name came out.
Right.
So,
unmasked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was the other man that she implicated in the allegation was, like, there was a classmate who, like, then
also
turned the music up.
Also a famous conservative figure.
Yeah, right. And, like, wrote a... Well, he's already, like, they were going through just his sort of general stance on things, and he's tried to discredit past people who have accused men of sexual assault. So he's kind of firmly rooted in, like, the, well, they don't know, blah, blah, blah. Right. And he has, like, a book that is, like, called, like, Wasted, like, Tales of a Gen X Drunk or something like that, where there's, like, a pseudonym. Like, there's a guy called Bart O'Kavanaugh.
So he's openly, like, a recovered alcoholic or a recovering alcoholic who was, like, during my high school years, like, I was constantly blacked out and, you know. But yeah, he has these stories of a guy whose name is what?
Bart O'Kavanaugh. There's a mention of Bart O'Kavanaugh. There in this book, it says, Shag scored a hit, then handed me the glass. I drank. If you were standing anywhere near a quarters game, you could get picked even if you don't want to play or weren't paying attention. So how do you like prep? Mary asked. It's cool. Do you know Bart O'Kavanaugh? Yeah, he's around here somewhere. I heard he puked in someone's car the other night. Yeah, he passed out on his way back from a party. So, I mean, I don't know what that means, but I think, I don't know if Brett Kavanaugh can say, oh, I don't know anything. I've never done anything like that.
I've never done anything illegal, I think is one of the things. Or I think Judge, the friend who turned up the music.
Aaron Judge?
Aaron Judge. No, I think it's
Mark Judge.
I'm not following it close enough.
Is Aaron Judge the baseball
player? Baseball
player,
yes.
Yeah. I was like, wow.
The Yankees.
Yeah. So Mark Judge was saying something about, like, I didn't know him to engage in these sorts of illegal behaviors. But at that time, like in the high school yearbook, Kavanaugh was voted treasurer of the Keg City Club. Or I don't know. This is what his yearbook said. So maybe this was just like a funny, like a inside joke, but treasurer of the Keg City Club, 100 kegs or bust.
Okay.
Like something to do with Beach Week Committee, which Beach Week is just where all these prep school, like privileged kids go to the beach from the DC area and just get wasted for a week. And also like something with the police in Rehoboth, which is where the Beach Week happens. So, you know, I mean, whatever.
I just think, at the very least, the Republicans have to allow this person to be heard and properly, just at some level, have this process have some kind of shred of respectability to it.
Yeah.
Because the steamrolling thing, we saw it was like all this other stuff had to get unearthed. Cory Booker was like threatening to release documents that were
classified.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, no,
Spartacus.
I know who he is.
Right.
This is the closest I'll get to my Spartacus
moment.
Okay. You don't say that. You just you just have the
it's
moment.
Like, are you wearing a Booker 2020 t-shirt? yeah, and I just think, you know, at this point it's it's good to see that there are some people on the right that are showing some shred of decency to be like, not just do the thing that I thought they were going to do, which is be like, ignore it.
They can't do
that. You know, I'm sure if the White House, if they were going to play it the way they wanted to, they would probably just try and obscure this move on. Or what they'll do is just try and smear her, which
so
is usually what happens.
You're saying move on from me too.
Move on from me too.
There you go. And, you know, Kellyanne Conway, I think you were just referring to, was...
she's the hero.
She's like the voice of reason in this case, which is crazy. But she was saying, like, don't attack her. Don't insult her. Let's let her
Anyone with it, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, even... Trump seems to be somewhat reasonable on this,
right.
Because he said, and I'm sure somebody had to sit him down and, you know, direct him with shiny objects and treats, you know, that this was what he had to say. But he basically said that, you know, if it needs to be delayed, it needs to be delayed.
Yeah.
So he's acknowledging it's a serious thing. And actually, it looks like they are now saying that they will both testify on Monday, so a week from yesterday. So, yeah, it will officially be delayed. So that's good, at least, that they're not trying to just, like, jam it in under the wire.
Well, I mean, they couldn't. Like we were saying, it's literally the least you can do when something like this comes up, especially when, you know, with Al Franken, they were very quick to just believe the accusers and move forward with it. At the very least, they need to extend that same sort of... practice to this process.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. 2 days ago, Bert and Ernie were trending on Twitter, which caused many of us to worry about which world leader's penis had been compared to which Muppet. But it was actually in response to a bunch of reports that a former Sesame Street writer had confirmed what we all suspected, that Bert and Ernie were gay.
Uh-huh.
And the person, basically, he is gay and wrote for Bert and Ernie and said that this was just kind of always what he had in mind, that they were a gay couple. And then Sesame Street came out and said they were created to teach preschoolers that people can be good friends with those who are very different from themselves, and basically said they're not gay, they're more asexual, which...
Uh-huh.
Muppets.
That vibes. That works with them. I've seen the Muppets.
Right. Muppets.
They're not asexual.
Muppets are not asexual, guys. Come on. Miss Piggy's sole motivation is to fuck Kermit in public over and over again. But
they're telling me that's asexual. The idea of the, like, pushing back on it is so funny. Frank Oz really came out.
Yeah.
He's like, they're not gay.
And I mean, you could view it as like everybody had their own interpretation. The different
people
who were performing and writing the characters had their own interpretation. And I think that's probably okay. Like, and I think it's fine to ask different people, you know, what their interpretation is. I mean, I think it's important to keep in mind that some people do interpret, like some viewers have interpreted them as being gay, and that's been both good and bad. Like in Mississippi, they banned Sesame Street for being too progressive.
Oh, when it first came out?
Yeah, when it first came out. And
they're like, what are blues doing hanging out with greens?
Exactly. And there was a preacher who was like, didn't want children to be allowed to watch Sesame Street and asked the government for it to be banned because Bert and Ernie were two male characters who lived together, and he was assuming they were gay. But
oh, and wasn't it that they, like, that they sew together and tend,
yeah, that they
tend
sew
to
together
plants
and
together
garden
or something,
together, yeah.
Therefore?
Yeah, which, therefore they must be gay.
It's funny, though, too, because for such a show that was very progressive and was, like, all about, like, inclusion, and you have, like, kids with disabilities, you'd be surprised that they wouldn't have a couple that was gay to just show, like, yo, love comes in all these forms, and
yeah,
we don't have to be cryptic about it. Because
Absolutely.
That's what Sesame Street is. That's the vibe. And I think that's that's why I'm like also like, why are you getting caught up in like whether or not, like, why don't you then just come out and just create some characters for young kids to see that represent people in same-sex relationships that, hey, we all out here.
I mean, I feel like Allen Iverson, remember his famous quote, like, are we talking about practice?
Right.
We talking about puppets?
Right.
We talking about puppets here? Like, I mean, I think people like the idea that people are like getting so outraged, or you know, these conversations about puppets, and I understand, like, oh, it's this the mythology or the archetypes and all these other things that kids are seeing and they're learning lessons,
right,
and all that stuff. Yeah, but they're puppets at the same time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. When I was in college in creative writing classes, you'd write a story, then you have to read it in front of your classmates, and then everybody would dissect it,
right,
and then all these people would add in all this meaning that they read from your story. Like, oh, I really love the symbolism you did here, and I'd just be like, oh yeah, well thank you. And I'm
right,
like,
right.
I had no intention of that right, symbolism, right?
Right.
But like once you release art into the world, like that Wilco song, it's like it's no longer yours, right?
Yeah, right.
Now it belongs to the world.
And I do think that sometimes that stuff is present, and it's just a part of your mind that you didn't have access to that was working on that stuff sometimes.
Maybe. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, but I agree that like there's a lot of stuff that's not intended. I just wonder if like some of the people might not have been intending it, and some people might have been intending it, but it doesn't matter because it's creating its own meaning in the world.
Right,
you know?
And I think it's one of those things because there have been multiple people who have either voiced them or been the puppeteers or wrote for them, that a lot of people have had their hands on it, and sometimes people did have those intentions, other times people didn't. But
right.
You just have to accept that if everyone's bringing their own thing to it, like you don't have to shoot down someone's interpretation of it to be like, they're not gay.
Right.
And if you don't want them to be gay, then like whatever.
Yeah, they're not gay to you, man.
Yeah, and if you want them to be, great.
Yeah.
But I think at the very least, I think in terms of a representation standpoint, you should just be like, if I think as a show, I think you can have characters like that, or just have that represented with whether it's through them or other people. I don't know.
The truth is, a lot of the time they behave like a gay couple who lives together, and a lot of the times they behave like 6-year-olds. Like our writer Jam was pointing out,
right.
They like love rubber duckies and they take naps during the day. Like
they're babies.
Yeah, sometimes they act like babies. In one storyline, Ernie gets lost at the mall and starts crying. Like that shit happens. Like,
oh. Yeah, from Maria.
Yeah,
yo,
yeah.
That fucked me up.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, it's...
Yeah, we're not actually... We're missing the actual point here.
Right.
How the fuck old are these people?
Right. Exactly. Yes.
Because if you're 6 years old, where are the parents at?
Right.
Yeah. And if you're fucking... If you're adults, as JM wrote, what the fuck is their job?
Right.
It's like Kramer.
Although,
I mean?
Elmo's parents... I guess Elmo's parents do come around sometimes, right? Parents do exist in the Sesame Street universe.
I am sure. Yeah. I don't know. I don't.
But Elmo is like literally
right
a baby. Like
yeah,
he,
Elmo.
Yeah, that was pretty good
Elmo
actually.
Baby.
Wow, Elmo is here.
Wow, in our fourth scene is Elmo.
Elmo thinks everyone's getting too focused on the oriented.
Anyway, but yeah,
okay.
Are they adults? Is really what I need to know.
Okay.
How old are these Muppets? I would love to see a breakdown of all of the Muppets' ages. I would love it if Oscar the Grouch was like 14.
He's just a low teen 14 year old.
Yeah, he's a fucking angry teen.
It's like, what are you scared of, man?
Yeah.
Like, like when it comes to like this whole world that we're living in, it's either fear or love. Like, where are you operating from?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to build a wall because you're scared,
yeah,
or do you want to let refugees in because you love it?
Yeah, and
you know,
like,
it's like,
right,
what are you scared? What if these puppets are gay? What if they're the gayest things that exist in the world?
Right.
What's so scary about that to you?
Yeah, well, I think that's the funny thing is especially when the, like in California, the whole Prop 8 debate was going on about same-sex marriage, the sort of conclusions that they were drawing was usually the one I heard the most from people in the street who were like, yeah, man, we have to stop gay marriage. I'm like, well, why? And they're like, well, what's next?
Right.
And that was always the thing. Well, what's next?
Right.
Like, you can marry like a fucking horse. And I'm like, okay.
What?
You don't have to marry a horse. Your
right.
kid doesn't. Like, what's, I don't
also,
understand.
Not
like,
the
it's
same
not,
thing.
Well, yeah, right. But I'm saying, like, I was always, yeah, like you say, like, what is the existential threat to you of other people living their happiest life?
Right.
Is that they are going to force you to live like them? Because,
yeah.
But I guess because essentially that's what those people are trying to do to people who do want to have a same sex relationship. They're like, no, you can't have, you have to do what we do, is you fuck the opposite.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's because I'm trying to exert this control on you. The logical end game here is that if this happens, you're going to try and do that to me.
Maybe Frank Oz is so scared and came out so hard against this, not only because maybe he's homophobic, but maybe he also doesn't want to admit that he's a puppet.
Oh, wow.
He doesn't want to admit.
They say like it was like an analog for his relationship with Jim Henson.
Yeah, they said it was usually based on their friendship and, you know, one of them, I think Frank Oz was Bert.
Whoever the more conservative. Well, who was the more?
Bert.
Bert?
Yeah, and Ernie was kind of the more fun.
Yeah.
Fun dude.
Had those devious eyebrows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bert?
Eyebrow. Wait, which one was Ernie?
Ernie's the one with the skinny orange.
One. Like the skinnier headed one.
Oh, that's Ernie? No, that's Bert.
Oh, wait, no, that's Bert.
Yeah.
Man, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, I don't know either. I just know that they had, like, he had caterpillar eyebrows, right? They kind of could move, like, on their own.
Hold on. Before we just fuck this whole thing up, Bert is the one with the fucking, his head is shaped like corn.
Right.
With the shit blown off in the unibrow. Yeah. That's right. Okay, and Ernie is the orange man. Or boy.
Ernie's the homie. Bert is kind of got that, like, he's always aggravated a little bit about something. But they have a great relationship. Like, what? No matter what type of relationship you want to imagine it as, they have an awesome relationship, and it does teach you important things about having friendships with people. It's like a fairly accurate friendship for like being puppets for 6 year olds. It really is. Like, there's a lot of ways that their personalities clash that they make work that I think is good for young kids to see. Shit, let's not talk white supremacy in the law right now. Let's talk white supremacy and quarterbacks.
Oh, God.
So there's news out of Texas, the start of every good national news story. There's news that a school superintendent wrote on Facebook after a bad play by Deshaun Watson at the end of the Houston Texans game. He was like, see, that's why I can't have a black quarterback.
What?
And then he came out and said that he apologized, like didn't realize that it was a public post, and was just and then said I was just making a point about statistics. I wasn't trying to say anything racist.
Uh-huh.
And the news report was just like, oh, okay, so he apologized. That's not an apology.
No, it's
and
not.
That is underlining, like their headline was superintendent apologizes for racist remark about Deshaun Watson. That is an affirmation of race science.
Right.
He
yeah.
said that there were statistics backing it up. The only rigorous statistical analysis I've seen about black quarterbacks, and like this is one of my pet peeves, like this story, and so I always follow it. The only statistical analysis that there's been is that black quarterbacks are statistically more likely to be benched quicker and for lesser mistakes than white quarterbacks.
I can't. Oh, man. It has to be true. How many black quarterbacks do you think there have been in the NFL?
There's just been like, enough that Warren Moon had to have a support group for black quarterbacks. Like,
right.
Yeah.
So, and how many black quarterbacks have been to the Super Bowl? Because I am very willing to bet that the only statistic I can like conjure up with black quarterbacks is if you are a black quarterback, you are much more likely to take your team to the Super Bowl.
I also knew one kid who played for a high school team, should have been the quarterback, but didn't get to play. He was a black player, and the kid that got to play instead was white. And I'm not going to say his name because his dad's super famous in football.
I know his fucking name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wait,
I know where you grew up.
The quarterback's?
The quarterback's dad bought like the football field for the high school, and they're like, you're going to be the quarterback. His own team would boo the quarterback on it, being like, because you're so bad, put the other kid in who's like a born athlete, like is amazing, could have gotten a scholarship. He never got to play.
Yeah, we were talking
athletes, man, and politics, man. You show you how politics.
Yeah, exactly.
You can be good, talking, but shit can hold you down like that.
We were talking earlier this week. I think somebody made their myth that sports is a meritocracy, right?
That was Billy Wayne.
That was Billy Wayne. Yeah, he said sports is not an absolute meritocracy.
No, not
that's
at
a
all.
Perfect example.
Yeah, right. Like, that some dad was like, "Now you're the quarterback."
But the kid's dad's so famous, it's like you could have just walked on to any team, and that kid still could have gotten his scholarship, and like everyone could have been happy.
Right.
But even the kid, he didn't even want to play football. He like quit the first team he got on after he was done.
Right. Yeah. Well,
this whole like the thing was like I said that, but not in a racist way.
Yeah,
it's like really. And he's also as superintendent, I'm also going to introduce physiognomy to the curriculum.
Also, the first excuse I heard is like I didn't know it was public, so it's like okay, so you're privately racist.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
What?
Yeah,
that makes a difference.
I thought I was just sending this to my other Klansmen.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, fuck that guy. He should be fired, and I don't think he is going to be.
No, of course not. Because there's no justice.
They're releasing their decision, I think, later this week.
That's
and
so
the decision will be,
crazy.
Well, he didn't mean it in a racist way.
Right.
Exactly.
Plus, look at these statistics that I got
look
from,
at these selective.
From the Rush Limbaugh show. So Elon Musk, I guess
good
there's
transition.
A, thank you. I've been working on it. Elon Musk has a trip planned to the moon.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
We found out, you know, like they finally booked like the first private trip to the moon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To land upon the moon.
Okay.
And do it like not since the Apollo missions. So
you know, I thought they were just going to circle it and then come back.
I think that's
the
first
one. Yeah,
they're not landing.
No. But they want to see the moon. You know, they're up close and personal.
Right. I mean, that's cool.
And then so yesterday, or was it Monday? I think we found out who this person was. And it's this Japanese billionaire, Yusaku Maezawa. My voice cracks. He's the 18th richest man. And he's basically going to go, like, up with a bunch of artists. He's, like, a huge art collector. Like, he bought, like, he has, like, Picassos and, like, Basquiats and stuff. Like, he loves art.
He's fun.
Yeah. So he's bringing 8 artists to the journey.
He's going
to
kill 8 artists.
And they say they're going to see the moon up close and the earth in full view and create work to reflect their experience. So it's, like, there's, like, a...
That's
there's
a dope thing
that says,
to
like,
do with
hey, bro, I'll take
trip.
You. You can see the moon.
Right.
But you got to make me some art.
I mean,
moon art.
Still.
I would say it would be inspired. I would be inspired if I saw the moon up close.
Maybe you could be one of the artists.
I don't want to be. I can say that. Like, I don't. Well, maybe.
Wait, we should have a campaign to get a comedian also on
I
that
would
flight.
Say right. some funny shit there. Be like, hey.
Just making a joke out
oh,
of it.
Oh, so Kubrick got a lot of this wrong. Huh?
Yeah.
Just stuff like that.
There's no wind up here.
There's no wind up here.
I think a lot of people were also, you know, talking about how this. You know, there needed to be a little bit of money for SpaceX to kind of begin developing one of their rockets a little bit further. So by having this guy tag along, you know, it helps add a little money
when
to
is
the coffers.
It?
And I think 2023.
Oh, see, like now my son won't be old enough. Like, they need to be grown and like have their first job or something before I'm like, I'm gonna go see the moon, kids.
Right.
And they're like, nah, you're a dick.
No, you're
like,
not.
You know what? Right. Yeah, you're right. I need to raise you first.
It was funny though. They were interviewing, like, it's so funny how things become more and more attainable to non-experts. Like, you know, everything's kind of become easier to access. Like, if it's art or photography or making music, like there aren't
the
those
democratization
barriers
to, of art.
And like now we're seeing it with like space though. And it was funny to hear like astronauts be like, yeah, what do you think about this? Like, yeah, I guess, man.
Yeah, great.
I spent my whole fucking life to go there. Like, yeah, everybody can go now.
Sure. I hadn't had carbs in 17 years.
But yeah, they're saying like, I think people believe that Maezawa is spending between $100 and $2 million to go up there. So between $100 and $200 million. I'm sorry.
Oh,
$100
okay.
and $200 million.
$100 million and $200 million.
Anywhere between $100 and $200 million to get him and 8 friends to take a trip around the moon.
But like, how much is an economy class ticket?
That's what I was going
to
say.
To the moon?
Like,
yeah.
Do you think they're like, it's $100 million? And he was like, you're not trained well. And he's like, how about $200 million?
Okay.
And he's like, okay, yeah.
He's like, you want to bring 8 friends?
Yeah, that's, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it's, yeah. Also, shouldn't there be like a checklist of like, you should have done this stuff on the Earth first before we take you to the moon? Like, have you been to the top of Everest?
Right.
No? Then you need to go do that before
we
take you to the
moon.
Don't
just 1, 2, skip a few, 99, I'm on the moon.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. I think you should go like, hey, have you walked the whole Appalachian Trail?
Ooh, shit.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be
a
hilarious.
That have done it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be a hilarious process wherein they have to train all these like artists, these fragile artists.
It's a comedy waiting to be written.
Space, and they're just like dropping them into the bottom of the wilderness pools in America.
Would there be gluten?
Right.
Gluten. I can't eat certain paste foods.
I have celiacs.
Right.
Is that going to be a problem in space? I feel like, again, this could be a Christopher Guest movie, too. It's the tracking the 8 eccentric artists and a Japanese billionaire as they go to space.
Remember how we as a planet watched those shoot those 8 people up into space and we watched them die? Remember that?
Yeah.
The Challenger?
We did do that as a nation.
Right.
And I was a member that day.
Yeah,
because everyone was excited because the school teacher was going.
School teacher.
So they got all the schools involved.
Yep.
And then we learned about death in second grade.
Yeah. I still remember what that plume looked like when it went up.
I remember it was like 2 miles, there's this little tiny factory. They made little parts.
Mm-hmm.
And they made one of the parts that goes on the space shuttle. And that was like a big deal before.
The O-ring?
No, it wasn't that, but that was the thing afterwards. We're like, did that park?
Yeah, shit.
Oh, like in your town they were making that part?
Yeah,
oh,
it was just like this one. And that was like a big deal before
the
Challenger went up. It was like, yeah, one of the parts came from over
from
there
our town,
off
right.
old Deep Draw Road.
I read a book that did sort of a deep dive into the decision-making process of that. It was this book, The Wisdom of Crowds, that shows like how crowds, like, you can use crowds to like guess things really really well and like how market forces work. But then it used that as an example of how not to use crowds. And it was just basically like a couple dudes who were in charge of the whole committee were just like forcing it through. And like when that thing exploded, everybody on that committee knew what went wrong. They were like, yeah, there's a problem. Like, we need to delay it. And like, there were just people who were just like, nah, we push. We got to hit this deadline. And also, there hadn't been a major disaster. They were just like, no, we're
good.
We're fucking NASA. Yeah. We're crushing
we're
it, bro.
Gold.
And the guys in Apollo 13 were like, hey,
it got really that well.
This seemed like a disaster to us.
Right.
We didn't get to go.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. And on Friday, a gentleman named Randy Credico, with dog in tow, Washington Post specified, testified about his relationship with Roger Stone before a grand jury. This guy is very interesting. He's a comedian. He's also an associate of Roger Stone, also an associate of Julian Assange. Just this very weird mixture of, like, he's also a radio host. So he's sort of this mixture of political activist, commentator.
He's a Facebook friend of mine.
Facebook friend of Wayne's, most importantly. Yes. I didn't want to leave that to last.
Of course.
But
first of all, for people who don't know, like, what they are interested in is they see him as possibly being the connective tissue between WikiLeaks and Roger Stone.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Right. And so, then he was in there denying that, right? Or he won't say, right?
He won't say.
Oh, wait, what happened? So he came out and, like, the press started asking him?
So he comes out, the press.
Out of the testimony,
right. Testifying in front of Mueller. And the press asked how much of the questioning dealt with Assange. And he answered very little and was about to elaborate. And then his lawyer just said, don't. And that was it. So that was the end of that.
Right.
Just one detail that I love so much about he and Roger Stone's relationship.
Yeah.
So one of the messages they have on file is Roger Stone sending him a text.
By the way, Roger Stone, very down to earth.
Yes.
Very guy
just
next door.
Normal guy with a Nixon back tattoo.
Yeah.
He texted Randy Credico, I am so ready. Let's get it on. Prepare to die, cocksucker. Now, the circumstances of that text are amazing because Credico says it was when he found out that he was going to testify in front of the grand jury. And Roger Stone's version was that he had just learned that Credico had cancer and was depressed about it. And he was telling him to get ready to die, cocksucker, because that's just how he, like, treats his friends.
Right. The real reason is Roger Stone hears that Credico has something that contradicts everything that Roger Stone's been saying publicly.
Right.
He gets a text, I'm so ready, let's get it on, prepare to die, to cocksucker. What happened, Roger? Oh, he said he had terminal cancer.
Right.
That's why that seems far-fetched.
Right.
A little bit. I don't know, but that could be Roger Stone's trademark humor that's so nihilistic and morbid.
Yes.
I don't know.
And Credico was like, I don't have cancer. That's not true. None of this is true.
Weird.
So you're Facebook friends with Credico?
I've known him since the 80s.
He's a character.
Before he was political, he was just a comedian.
Right. Yeah.
And very good impressionist.
Yeah.
Like, really good.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. I never heard him do his bit, but I remember reading things where he was warning the lawyers. He's like, hey, I do voices, and I might do it during my testimony. It's just my thing. And I was like, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah, no, he was on the A-list. If I'm not mistaken, I think he did The Tonight Show in the 80s with Johnny Carson, with the big guest for the young comedians at that time. But even I think at that point he was starting to – he was going after Reagan and all of that. And
right.
Yeah, one of my favorite impressions of his was he used to do an incredible David Brenner. I don't know if you know who that is. You don't?
No,
I don't think so, no.
He's okay.
I know Yul Brenner.
Yes. No relation. So he used to do that, and he would do, like, you know, Archie Bunker and Edith Bunker
and that kind of thing.
So, and then the next thing you know, he's like, oh, Wayne, I'm going to El Salvador or, Nicaragua and write material for, the head of, not the Contras, the other guy.
The Sandinistas?
Yeah.
What do you mean write material?
Like do comments to help that guy politically. Ortega, I think that guy's name was.
Holy shit.
I think a guy's name was Daniel Ortega. I know that's in my head. I'm not looking it up. And so he went down there and would do rallies for him and like help him with his campaign
for
speech.
Dictators.
Yeah. Well, he's like became very left. He's like a lefty, like left.
Yeah.
And then, but he does some good stuff, like you know, like these draconian drug laws that gets
people
who are nonviolent drug offenders and stuff like that. He's very passionate. He's very funny, and he's just a weirdo. He's a comedian. It's just the weirdest political activist I've ever.
When you saw his name kind of start bubbling up in the news, were you kind of like, of course?
Of course, yeah. And it's literally every comedian just knows him as Credico. No one calls him Randy.
Oh, yeah, it's just Credico.
Like,
Credico.
Like, of course, Credico. Of course, he's going to be on the Mueller investigation.
Right, somehow.
You know, it's the same guy trying to get on Evening at the Improv is like, it's insane. It's insane that I know
Can you imagine he starts doing like material about testifying in the Mueller probe? Yeah, it's like, this guy's Mueller material.
But I will say he is consistent. He's not one of those like, just if it's a Democrat or it doesn't matter to him.
Right.
He's like,
no, it seems like it seems like he's very like principled in what his beliefs are.
And
they
he
just
had,
seem,
you know, he had a drug problem himself and it's Credico.
He's Credico.
I just love that he testified in front of a grand jury and had to bring a dog.
Right.
Like he's like, hey, I gotta bring a dog.
Classic Credico.
Did he travel with a dog a lot?
This is a new thing. I heard that he like rescued that dog from Chile. Like he's just he's a world traveler. He's just I don't know how he has a passport at this point, but
one of the articles
I really admire that guy. He's funny.
Yeah.
He's actually a funny
right. It's like, just so weird this overlap now. Of, like,
I actually
comedy
think
and
he has
Russia
that obsessive compulsive disorder. Gotcha. Is my take on
sure.
it. He's just like once he's fixated on, he can't let it go.
Right.
Yeah. But I love the guy. I love the guy.
One of the sources that we are using for research on Credico uses this photograph that is just this like real buttoned up public hearing. And then a really like a screen accurate Greek philosopher.
Yeah, right.
Like just he's got this like long white beard. He looks like Gandalf the White just with a lantern walking through the thing. And it says, Mr. Credico, dressed as the Greek philosopher Diogenes. Dirty.
The cynic. He's the one who founded cynic philosophy.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And very layered.
I would say that the thing that seems to connect him, Stone, and Julian Assange is cynicism.
Right.
And in some cases, very justified cynicism. All right. And finally, Ryan, we want to play a game with you. It is called Velocipede or Scooter. Miles,
yes.
Do you want to explain?
Yeah, so
what the fuck
is? In the Washington Post, Christopher Ingram wrote this sort of article about how the new debate is about all these scooters, like the Lime and Bird scooters that people just leave on the streets and if they're safe or not, and realize that this same kind of thing happened with the Velocipede, the big wheel in the front bicycle, the predecessor
like the
to the bicycle.
Late 19th century.
Yeah, exactly. And that the same criticisms like are very similar. It's like two-wheeled menaces blazing down the city streets and sidewalks, piloted by thrill seekers with little evident concern for their own safety or that of others. So they put together some quotes to find out if this is a quote from the time of the Velocipede or an op-ed about now in the Bird scooter. So first one, the new two-wheeled transportation options are no casual amusement.
That's the Veloso, the first one.
The Velociraptor.
We'll call it a bike.
Actually,
it's about the scooter.
Oh, really?
Yes, that was from a Washington Post.
Who the fuck wrote
that?
Well, that seemed like a little old-timey
I know,
in the language.
Yeah.
Or no casual amusement.
Well, what about this? The most senseless and ridiculous mania that ever took hold of the public.
That's got to be the Velociraptor.
The Velocipede? We're going with that one?
Velocipede.
And yes, you are correct. Attributed to an American newspaper writer commenting on bicycling in 1869.
Ah, that's amazing.
Next one. These vandals are destroying or desecrating the vehicles in disturbingly imaginative ways and celebrating their illegal deeds.
That's the scooter.
Yeah
that's
that
the
has
scooter.
To be. Yeah, because we saw people were throwing them in the fucking sea.
That's crazy to me.
They're
like, you hate like people not driving cars as much that you're going to throw these into
right,
the water?
Right, it's so short-sighted. It's just like some...
People are mad.
Just some weird Luddite type shit. Like, fucking scooter!
Yeah.
Like, I do not recognize this thing!
Yeah, exactly.
It must be away! But yeah, I think also people like local, especially in the West Side though, people like are very NIMBY-ish, like in Venice and like Santa Monica. Like if that shit's like on in front of your house, you're like,
it's dropping the property value.
Right. Exactly.
And is it? I feel like it's a. It says like your neighborhood's cool.
I don't think anyone's been like, you know, I fucking took a bath on that real estate deal with right. all those scooters outside.
An absolute bath.
Yeah, this is the next one. Seize, break, destroy all such machines found running on the sidewalks.
Sorry, what?
Seize, break, destroy all such machines found running on the sidewalks.
I mean, that has to be the scooter?
Right.
Yeah, I'd say that has to be the scooter.
It's the bicycle. 1819 newspaper.
Found running
in New Haven, Connecticut, railed against the sudden popularity of the Velocipede. Seize, break, destroy, or convert to their own use as good price. All such machines found running on the sidewalks.
I remember
taking
a time
care not
in this
to bear
country when the sidewalk was for bipedal people.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So did they just not know how those worked and they thought you could leave them running?
I have no idea what, I don't know what they're talking about. I think people were just getting hurt, and then they're like, how does a simple leg motion create all such energy? I don't know. It was an interesting time. Another one. Considering that the use of X is becoming more general, access to public promenades and sidewalks is hereby permitted or prohibited.
That's the scooter.
Promenades? Public promenades? Feels Velocipede.
It's the bicycle, you're right. Yes.
Wow.
Another one from 1869. And lastly, we'll do this one. The gentleman X-ing, cooling across our city streets and sidewalks at 15 miles an hour, the wind gently flapping their ties and tussling their hair, are indifferent to your angry glares.
That's the Velocipede.
I'm going scooter.
Scooter. Yep. Yeah, see? It's tough to know. It's tough to know.
Yeah. We are who we thought we were. We've just been in a time.
Have you been on a bird yet or one of the scooters?
I have not. And I actually was running yesterday and they were like laid across the sidewalk, almost like an obstacle.
Right.
And I had that like momentary inclination where I was
I should just throw this
shit into the street, but I didn't. And it was like early, nobody was around. It was 2:30 when I run.
I like you go, yeah. Nobody would have seen you.
Yeah, no, I could have gotten away with it.
Wait, 2:30 in the morning?
No, I was just joking. We talked about it. All right, that's going to do it for this week's weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.